Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
We need more UNITY.
Cool. Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, we'll embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Right now.
Now's the time to do the right thing. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
Right now.
Yes, yes, the war must cease, y'all, because we got wars not just in Gaza. Apparently, we have them right here in the U.S. of A. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we are bringing voices from all over who are fighting on various battlefields, and we've heard from people who are fighting for justice, fighting for democracy, fighting for better health care, affordable housing. There are so many battlefronts in this country of land and opportunity, and so we know that does not apply to everyone, especially folks of African descent. So we have here today, for me, a sad but, you know, necessary show. But I do want to say the opinions expressed on Black Radio Hall of Fame are those of the program host, myself, and not necessarily those of Harris Stowe State University or Black Radio Hall of Fame. And I also want to add another warning, because some of the language that we will be using, it will be graphic. And so we're talking about the murder of two young black men and what has happened to their bodies. And so for some people that might be a little squeamish, but if you can feel that, then you could imagine what the parents felt when they saw the desecration of their babies. So without, you know, further ado, first of all, I want to thank Brother William Muhammad with Final Call, one of my brothers in writing, who is helping to keep these cases alive, and also to Jonathan Burrs, who connected me with the two families. I have to unfortunately say that Renee McGee, who is the mother of Stephen Johnson, will not be able to join us today. She fell on Sunday and had a battery of tests, and she was just plumb out of it. She's, you know, suffering from fatigue. But I'm going to give you a synopsis of her son's case. But today we will have Kenneth Johnson, who is the father of Kendrick Johnson, and I'd like to welcome him to the show. Mr. Johnson, and I'm going to call you Kenneth if you don't mind. You can call me Jamala. Welcome to Voices from the Battlefield.
Okay. Hello, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for taking time out, and I'm sure that you have had talked about this quite a bit over the years, but we're going to ask you to do it one more time for us. So here's what's happening with Renee McGee's case. She's been struggling with this situation for almost 24 years. Her son was nearing the end of a probation period in Macon, Georgia, when the probation officers picked him up to take him into custody because allegedly he tested positive for marijuana in his system. So it wasn't until 6 days later that his loved ones were able to locate that body, which was floating in the river, badly beating, and the brother was handcuffed from behind. So it was a surprise when the death was ruled an accidental drowning, y'all. And on top of that, when the parents did an independent autopsy, they found no water in his lungs. And not only this, listen to this, there was no marijuana in his system. So in other words, this was some kind of ploy to get this boy in their custody. And there is witnesses who said they saw the probation officers beating this kid down by the river, yet none of those folks have been held accountable. Nobody has been charged with his murder. And so it still stands that, you know, there was an accidental drowning. So this is part of the judicial system that we have to make sane and make just, y'all. And I would just say that one of the things that compounded the suffering of Renee McGee and her family around the son is that happened in 2000. The grandson, Rashad, was almost the same age as his dad when he was murdered by law enforcement. Her grandson died in a mysterious car chase by the police. So, you know, you can imagine what that mother has had to deal with, and she has not given up on neither her son or her grandson, but just imagine what she's been going through. And we'll hear some of what, you know, Kenneth Johnson and his wife have been going through, struggling for their son. So some of you might have even heard about the Kendrick Johnson case, because I ran across a documentary some years ago, and of course I was, you know, just y'all know how I can get around some of these cases, just pissed. Because here's the thing, you all, you looking at your child's body and somebody's telling you something does not make a damn bit of sense, and you're supposed to accept that and go somewhere and grieve. These folks are not doing that. These people are not doing that. Now, this show was already scheduled before St. Louis Public Radio and its partners did the whole thing about 1,000 unsolved murders in St. Louis. These two murders from Georgia are unsolved, and there are many, many more, you all, across this country when it comes to our people. So I'm going to have Kenneth Johnson just, you know, talk really about his son's case and the fact that this was like in 2014. So 2014 was a really interesting year, y'all, because you know that was the year that Mike Brown was killed. So we're talking about coming up on the 10th anniversary of that murder by Ferguson police. But this boy, this was found rolled up in a wrestling match. And they called it a freak accident. Now, y'all, if y'all have ever seen a wrestling match, you know you can't roll yourself up in that. And again, this family had to do its own, you know, investigation, hiring folks. And they hired somebody, and they found some other injuries on Kendrick's body, including blunt force trauma. So I'm going to ask, you know, Kenneth to come into this conversation and talk about, I mean, I talked a little bit about how the body was found, but there were some other interesting things about the body. And I just want to, you know, give my condolences to you and the family, and also to the community of Valdosta, because when stuff like this happens, it's not just about the family, because I know people in the community rallied around Renee McGee just like they did your son. So tell us about how you're doing right now, how your family's doing right now as you go into, well, you passed the 10th anniversary of Kendrick's death. So how are you doing?
Okay. Hey, Kendrick's death was 2013,
okay.
Yes. Well, you know, it just like it's still 2013, you know. You know, that day, you know, sticks with you, you know, every day. It seems like we are stuck in 2013, because of the way that me and my wife, his siblings, have to continue to fight for the truth, of what happened to Kent, you know. And it's sad for any family to have to go through three things like this, especially when there's so much evidence right before your eyes, and the authorities try their best to look over the evidence that they discovered, the pictures that they took from the crime scene, that it's their pictures. The evidence is their evidence, but which they didn't disclose, they didn't disclose to the public. And so they expect us to just overlook what we see at the crime scene and the things that we have found out, of what happened to Kendrick. You know, it appears that Kendrick did not clip his own fingernails. Kendrick's fingernail was clipped down to the point of bruises. Where they bruised his fingers.
And why do you think that happened, Kenna?
Well, someone with knowledge knows if Kendrick was in an altercation. This was someone with policing knowledge. They know that something, evidence, a skin or whatever can be on his fingernails.
Mm.
So they clipped his nails down to the point of bruising.
Wow.
Kendrick didn't do it himself. Kendrick didn't stick himself with a stun gun. To this evidence and this, the proof of this is right there in the photos that the authorities took right there at the crime scene. The stun gun marks on Kendrick's side is so noticeable, they hold up his shirt in one of the pictures and takes a picture of it, but they do not disclose that with the public.
But was that part of the autopsy, their autopsy that they did admit that there was some stunt?
They have never even acknowledged that this even happened.
So their own pictures show that there was additional bruising to the body, but that never came up in their autopsy.
The bruising of Kendrick, what even the EMT, the first responders who was there on the scene, in their report, they acknowledged that that this is a crime scene. There's bruises on his body. Still yet, the authorities or the GBI, Dr. Marianne Gaffney-Clair, neither one of those put that in their report.
And I just want to stop you for a minute, Kenneth, because I want people to know the GBI is Georgia Bureau of Investigation, so it's like the state FBI. Okay, go ahead.
Yes. They never put that in, and neither one of those never even put it in their reports. It has been so much cover-up of what happened to Kendrick. We must hold the authorities and whoever, judges, and whoever allowed this to happen for so long, they all must be held accountable.
Absolutely. Now, I remember when I was talking to Renee about her son's case, and she likened it to that body looking like Emmett Till, because first of all, it was, you know, had been beaten very badly, and then it had been thrown in the water. So that child was almost unrecognizable. And then they tried to do something to the body. I can't remember what added some clay on top. It was some weird stuff, and they also had photographs of that. So when you saw photographs of your child, there were some things that obviously you couldn't see internally. But I understand that when there was the autopsy that you all had done, you all found out that there were some missing internal organs. Is that true?
That is very much true. I not only seen photos on that Sunday, I actually viewed the body itself. Because we did a protest, they found Kendrick that Friday, so no one had identified Kendrick. They, let his grandfather, view some kind of like a photo, a ran off photo copy, like it's come from a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And they let my daughter see her shoot. So we had that Saturday or Sunday, we had a rally demanded that Kendrick's body do not leave Valdosta until me or his wife properly identify his body. So the sheriff came to where we was. And so he talked all this nonsense. And come to find out, by talking to one of the guys who was at the rally at the time, just a couple of weeks ago. And he was saying the sheriff told him and another guy that he not worried about the protest. He just worried about what the other people's gonna do. I said, man, what you mean, he worried about what other people, he said the sheriff was talking about at that time, he was talking about the Klansmen.
Mm.
I said, well, what the fuck the Klansmen got to do with what rallying for Kendrick and for the truth to come out about Kendrick? What had the Klansmen got to do with that? So that lets you know that, you know, what all was going on at that time.
And it was much deeper than this kid just being found in the gym.
I tell people all the time, this Kendrick's case is much deeper, than people really think it is.
Mr. Johnson, what do you all think happened? Because this kid was in the gymnasium during school, you know, and people around, they're in the gym. What do you all think happened?
Well, it's not what we think happened, it's what we know happened.
Okay.
Kendrick was murdered. It's you cannot make a murder an accident by any means. The things that we have discovered, it's so deep and there's some things that I can't really talk about.
I understand. Because it's still under investigation. And you all have filed a lawsuit as well.
Yes. Yes, but you have to notice, when I went to see, you take the crime scene photos, right?
Mm-hmm.
The crime scene photo when Kendrick was on the floor, at the crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
Look at his face. His face is lighter, like a lighter complexion. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do him being at the crime scene with his face is a lighter complexion to Friday to when I went and viewed him Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm.
When they opened that bag to let me identify Kendrick, his face is crispy black, like his face is charbroiled.
Mm.
So how did his face get from a clear complexion to Sunday? His face is a really dark. If I didn't know
Jesus, that was supposed to be your son,
I wouldn't never know that was my son. Mm. I would never know that was Kendrick.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how bad his body was. Mm-hmm. So how you gotta really think, how can if a body is properly stored the way it's supposed to be, how can a body, this is not a white body, this is a black body.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Blackness don't turn like that. A black body and a white body, there's two different bodies. A white body turn dark and blue like that, but a black body does not turn like that. If that body is stored properly, it's no reason that his body should have turned that color and his face was charcoal black.
Right, because if you're going to refrigerate it, it's going to stop any decomposing, right?
That's right. Uh-huh. That's right. I'm telling you what I seen with my own eyes, and I questioned them about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So So that Sunday, I got a call from the sheriff. He called me and told me to come down there, you know, you need to talk to him. I said, nah, man. He said, but you need to come by yourself. I said, no, I ain't coming by myself. I said, me and my wife come down there. So me and my wife went down there. And the very first thing that they tried, see, every time we refuted something that they said, they had changed the narrative of it, right? Mm. So at first they tried to tell us Kendrick went down feet first. And he bent over to try and pick up his shoe. And then tried to retrieve the shoe. I politely told them that is bullshit.
Mm.
I say, man, there's not enough room inside that mat for him to bend over. So, Detective Scribe Jones, this has been 2013. I'll never forget this conversation. Scribe Jones said, no, Mr. Johnson, wait a minute. You don't understand. When the body died, the body will fall over. I said, still yet. If he'd have died standing straight up, still yet, there's not enough room in that body. There's not enough room in that mat for his body to fold over like that. It's not enough. The next 2 days, the narrative changed that he went down head first.
Hmm.
So if they was investigators on the scene, how can they get that mixed up?
So, you know, I'm going to return to the original question because you gave us a lot of detail. When you think about the what and the how and the why that Kendrick was murdered, here he is. He's a athlete, good-looking kid. I guess when I first heard some of the accounting, it was like maybe some of his team members had done that. And that's why I was asking you, what do you all think happened? But then when you mentioned the Klan, well, we know the Klan didn't come in there with, you know, sheets on and took him and did that. So what do you think happened on that day? We know that he was murdered, but who and why and how?
I'm not going to say a who, but jealousy and hate.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Out of that entire school, Kendrick was into it with one person, and everybody know who it was.
Uh-huh. And so you think that some of the students might have done it, and then the authorities helped do a cover-up?
Yes.
Okay. And you know, and I'm telling people this so that they can go, but there is a documentary about this case, and it might even be on YouTube by now, but I think I saw it on cable. But some of the things that Kenneth Johnson is talking about with us today, there are photos. So when you look at that rolled up mat, which I have, when he's describing how impossible that is, then you know that it's impossible to wrap yourself injured into a wrestling mat. I just, you know, to me, it's such an insult for you to be looking at what you know is a fact and somebody's telling you, no, you don't believe what you're looking at is something different. You're just adding, you know, insult to injury. Folks are already grieving about the loss, and then you're going to give them this story that doesn't even match up with the facts, doesn't even match up with the autopsy. So Kenneth, when you all heard that, when you did the you exhumed the body again and you asked for independent autopsy, this is where you found out that a lot of the organs were missing. What do you think that was all about?
Well, first, I want to get one point across before I go there.
Okay.
Who Kendrick was in two or three different other altercations with, everyone knows that this particular student's father was an active FBI agent at that time. So we believe that's where the knowledge to do whatever they've done, you know, was there. You know, that's what the knowledge did, what to do with this matter to try and cover up. Mm-hmm. But anybody with common sense would know, hey, looking at the photos and everything, hey, this is this shit is not right.
Right, right. So all that stuff from the clipping of the fingernails to get rid of evidence to removing organs, somebody with knowledge about how this was going to unfold had to be directing things. Is that your point?
That's right.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Hmm. All right. So the organs, we got the GBI, who later was over the autopsy room, doing the autopsy. She done it herself. Her name was Marianne Gaffney Kraft out of, Dry Branch, Georgia. That's up around Macon. We got her in deposition. She said she put the organs into an evidence bag and put the evidence bag on top of Kendrick when they left. So, but you got, I want your audience to know, if this was just an accident, right? When you do an autopsy on a body, nowhere we have looked and talked to different people and different people. No one could just a plain autopsy of an accident, right? Mm-hmm. You don't cut the tongue, the windpipe. You don't discard the brain. And Kendrick, every organ was missing out of Kendrick from the top of his head to his pelvis. I'm talking about everything was gone.
Wow.
And then you got what looked like she in his back. No autopsy that we ever found where they cut a person back the way they cut Kendrick's back. They flipped him over and just put just deep cuts in his neck, all in his back. If it just was an accident, what caused all this? We suspect that she was trying to cover up the bruising on his back.
Uh-huh.
Because you still can see some bruises over the cuts that she done. If you can still see some of the bruises on his back from the cuts that she done, what you think you could have seen if she did not cut his back?
Especially when you know that the traditional cut for autopsy is the Y cut in the front. And you can access all organs that way. That's why they use that particular procedure.
That's right. And but they cut him from the front and the back.
Wow. Now I've never heard of that, Kenneth. Never.
Yes. Yes. And there's photos to prove that she done exactly that. And when you ask her, well, if it was just an accident, she said she didn't know. She said it was a theory. Anybody knows that you can't rule on a case on a theory. You got this theory. You cannot rule like that. But she said over and over and over it was a theory. So how do you rule that this is an accident on a theory? How do you rule Kendrick went down inside a wrestling mat when you have no proof that Kendrick went down inside a wrestling mat? You got to have a proof. You got to have proof to rule the way you rule.
And in other words, whatever you find on that body, that's how you come up with the conclusion for the cause of death. And hers didn't match up.
Didn't match up at all. You take what they said and you take anything that they have said. You take the crime scene photos, put them side by side, it doesn't match.
Hmm.
If you take the crime scene photos and from what they said, you can just take the crime scene photos and tell that it was a crime.
So we got a case here of nothing looking the way it's supposed to look in an accidental death. Then we have all of these documents, investigations, making up a story to match this stuff up. None of it matches. How do you investigate a case like that? How do you all seek justice? And what have you been doing since the death of your son?
We've been continuing to investigate, continuing to find out information to continue to reach out to people up in D.C. We just continue to push and never give up. Mm-hmm. The more we push, the more we find out. Mm-hmm. The more we can make them talk, mm-hmm. the more we can find out.
Wow. Because I'm thinking if there was a person of interest or a suspect, which when kids in a school know something, that name keeps bubbling up again and again. So was there any
yes,
he was interviewed and found out where were you at the time of this death and blah 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 blah, the stuff that they normally do. Was that done?
It'd be three different white kids now. It'd be three different white kids. Let me start over. The fear that they put amongst the black kids, right?
Mm.
But it's been three different white kids tried to come out and tell what happened. They pressured them. They made them look like they was lying. And they locked them up.
And I just want to point out here, this is similar to what happened in Steven Johnson's case. The intimidation and threats were so great that folks started backing away off the case. Even I think the individual, the NAACP had given the family a name of a coroner, a medical examiner. They shipped that body all the way to California, from Georgia to California, so that that doctor could do the case. He pretty much ruled out that it was, you know, accidental drowning. He said no water in the lungs, and noted all these bruises and stuff like that. But then over time, he started backing off of the case. And so, and I want people to understand, when you're trying to seek justice and the system itself starts turning against you, the avenues start, the doors start shutting, and you literally have nowhere else to go. Except to just keep, like you said, keep pushing, and hope that somebody who knows something is not scared and will come forward, because that's what you really need now, right, Kenneth? Somebody who was there with intimate knowledge has to say, I know what happened, and here's what happened, and here's the people that were involved.
Well, one thing that a lot of people don't understand, right? There's ways that you could try and push and make the truth come out. In a case like Kendrick's, right? You have so many officials done tried to cover up, what happened to Kendrick. So now they don't, everybody who tried to cover up and try to make it seem like what it wasn't, they have committed crimes. So then that's when you start pushing to hold them accountable.
Mm.
Once you start holding them accountable, push and push and push, sometimes things like this don't happen overnight. It take a long time to really get a rhythm going.
Mm-hmm.
When this first happened, they say, man, people used to tell me, man, sometimes it take 10, 15 years for the truth to come out. Back then, and what I knew, I didn't understand it, but it turns out that is true.
Yeah.
So now we go after the ones who allowed this to happen. You don't see, to hold these people accountable, you don't need to know who. Only thing you got to do is prove that this happened.
And they know, and they knew it happened, and they held.
They knew it happened, mm-hmm. and they allowed it to happen, and they allowed the cover up to take place. So when you go after them, the truth will start unraveling. Who did it?
Right. So I know at one point the family did file a lawsuit. Who was that lawsuit against? Was it some of the people that you thought were part of the conspiracy who needed to come forward?
Well, the first attorney that we had, it made us think that he was part of the, how I want to say that.
The cover up?
He was part of the trying to derail what was going on, right?
Okay.
So what we are saying is how he filed these I didn't agree with going after all these people like the way he did. Uh-huh. Because I knew in my mind, I didn't have no, you know, legal knowledge at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I had to make myself learn.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, I used to question him, why would you go after all these people? Go after the top tier.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to go after the top tier. We just need to go after four or five of them. You know, I said, because ain't no way in hell that you can serve 38 to 40 people if you don't have a 7 to 8 days to do it.
Right.
And he did a lot of late filing, you know, late this, late that, and, you know, and that made, you know, it's made me real weary and suspicious of how the hell he was operating.
Was he really working for you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. So that happened, but like now, we push that, you know, the school board, the sheriff department, the GBI crime lab, the crime lab there in Rochester, you know, just at the top tier, because you make the top fall, the rest of them gonna fall in your lap.
Exactly. If you're just joining us, this is Jamala Rogers, talking to Kenneth Johnson, who is the father of Kendrick Johnson, who we're going to say was murdered in 2013 right there in the Lowndes County High School gymnasium, allegedly accidental, you know, asphyxiation, wrapping himself up in a wrestling mat. And the family later finding out through their own autopsy, independent autopsy, that this boy had been brutally, you know, beaten, as well as a lot of his organs had been taken out and destroyed. So this is not a case in the 1920s, y'all. This happened in 2013 in Valdosta, Georgia. So, you know, this is a contemporary lynching, as well as, I'm saying, Stephen Johnson's was as well. Unfortunately, Renee McGee is not here to talk more about that case, but I want you all to understand what it means, because one of the things you said, Kenneth, was like, you didn't really know the legal system. You know, we as parents, like, you know, we get our kids to a certain point and we think, okay, good, we, you know, we got them involved in this, we got them back. Maybe they're going to not have these encounters and end up as a statistic. And yet here your son is, you know, a sophomore on the team, good-looking kid, talented, his whole future ahead of him, and he ends up like this. So, you know, we never know when something like this is going to happen to our families. And so my goal in getting both Kenneth and Renee on the show was not for you to feel bad, not for the listeners to say, well, what's to be done? We have a system that is corrupt, y'all. And I want us to think about what kind of system we would like to have if something happened to us like it's happened to Kenneth and Jackie Johnson. Just think about that. I mean, what does it mean? What would justice look like if we could redesign a system that when something like that happened to our loved one, we know with no equivocation that justice is going to be served? That's what I want us to think about today. What is left for the Johnsons to do? And I'm talking about the Johnsons in Valdosta and one in Atlanta. What would this system have to look like? Because as you listen to Kenneth, you heard how the stacking started to happen. The stacking of the system against this family as they sought justice for their baby. So I just, you know, Kenneth, I just want to welcome you back again to talk about the role of the government's own investigative unit that you all thought would be more helpful than the local authorities. But what the Georgia Bureau investigation, what was their role in all of this?
Still the same, completely, just, you know, didn't want to acknowledge the truth, and because they didn't want to hurt one of their own. The Georgia Bureau investigation folded too, because Dr. Kraft, she was a state employee. So they take her down, they're going to make the whole system look bad. And one thing that we really, you know, believe that the state of Georgia. So you have to understand, if they take down Dr. Kraft, right?
And that was the coroner, right?
That's the coroner.
Okay.
She worked for the Georgia Bureau of Investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that this lady have done, every investigation, I mean, every court case that she testified at as an analyst, everything that this lady have done in her whole career, they know if they take her down for doing what she done to Kendrick, every case she done in her career gonna be scrutinized.
Right, it's gonna be called into question.
Because they say, mm-hmm. yes, mm-hmm. Think about how many murderers that this lady done put away by her testimony, right?
Right.
It was scrutinized everything that she ever done in her career. And I believe that's what the Georgia Bureau investigated, the people who over her seen, is that where she go down, everything she done, every case she done is going to be able to be reopened because her credibility is going to be shot.
Right, right.
And so they chose to not to do the right thing for Kendrick because of everything this woman had done.
But it's almost like a house of cards, Kenneth, because if you say this person did wrong, she couldn't have done that in a vacuum. There were other people who knew and had to sign off. And so, as you pointed out rightfully, if she is targeted and her credibility shot and all the things lined up to say she actually lied, you know, she saw something and lied about it, then the whole system has to be corrupt and will come down. And I think, you know, just in terms of just this being a teachable moment for the audience, is that you cannot expect these people to police themselves, to correct themselves. That's going to have to come from us, the people who pay their salaries and who have to go through those systems to say, this we're not doing this. We are not doing this. Because if it can happen to a Kendrick, a kid that had no criminal record, had, you know, doing his thing as a student in high school, having fun on the team, what's the rest of us like? We all been, you know, capable of having to be victimized in that way, and no accountability for the folks who are part of the system.
And one thing that these people do, I want to tell your audience to, no matter what their family members or friends do in their life, if something ever happened to them, do not let people scrutinize what they pass and for his family pass. Because one thing that they tried to do to us, from the very beginning, I'm talking about the very beginning, the first thing the sheriff told me, that, hey man, I don't even have fingerprints on your son. So I asked him, I said, well, why are you looking for something that he may have done in his life that doesn't have anything to do with what happened to him?
Mm.
Then they scrutinized me and his mother, went through all our criminal history. They didn't have, the only thing, we might be able to fight here and fight there. That's the only thing they could pull up, but something, a criminal record we didn't have. My son didn't have. And that's what they always trying to find out when a person is victimized by something. They always try to find, hoping he have drugs in the system. Or they gonna try and find out if him or his parents have a criminal history, so they can attack their credibility.
And you know what? I'm almost sure that happened in Renee's case, because here you have, when I'm thinking about her son, And when I first heard that he was taken by the probation officers, handcuffed, hands behind his back. And why would he run? He was literally a day away from his probation ending. Why would this boy run and run with handcuffs? And it was reminiscent of, you know, back in the day when the Klan would say run, and then your body became the target practice for them. And then, yes, then the same thing happened to the son. They had to know Rashad was the son of Stephen, and all of a sudden he's in a car crash with the police, yet they found bullet holes in the airbags. I mean, you know, you say we are unfamiliar with this system, but we are very familiar with the ins and outs of the corrupt system because we've seen it happen time and time again over the years. But I think the hope of most black people is that they're going to correct themselves. And therefore, the next time it happens, you know, a family won't have to go through this. But we've seen time and time again that is not the case. And the poor families got to do their own investigation. They got to pay for all of these private, you know, investigators for independent autopsy. Why do we have to do that when there's a system that we pay folks to do that?
That's right. If I can, why I went into that? This is why I went into that. What I just said. The two boys who father is the FBI agent. Listen to me closely. The two boys whose father was a current FBI agent at that time, their friend, their other white Caucasian friend, right? His girlfriend testified in a deposition saying that he told her that he did not kill Kendrick, but he did help roll him up.
Mm.
And when she said that, and she also said that when the boy's friend was going up in Macon to testify before the grand jury, that she and him met with the mother and father, and the father was trying to instruct him how to testify before the grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, they turned around in that same deposition and say, hey, haven't you been arrested? They told the girlfriend, haven't you been arrested for shoplifting?
Wow. You know, wow.
Then they start going after her and trying to discredit her testimony of what she said.
Uh-huh. Cause if you're a thief, surely you're a liar, right?
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. That's what they start trying to say. Uh-huh. They start trying to discredit what she was saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I go by. That's what I meant by when I was saying, you know, how these people will try to turn around and use your past when you are trying to tell the truth on anything that would incriminate them.
Right.
You have to, and I want to say this, how corrupt they are. They staged the superintendent's daughters that morning in a class that they never were supposed to be in. And they was the ones supposedly go over, gets on the mat, and finds Kendra all of a sudden.
Mm.
That shit was staged.
Mm. Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
They knew that day that Kendra was dead. When they stole Kendra somewhere in that school. And you can't tell me that they didn't know that day when Kendrick went missing during school hours, not after school.
Right, right.
During school hours. When Kendrick went missing, they already knew Kendrick was dead. The cover up started then.
Right, right. Because I kept thinking, this kid is supposedly killed in the gym with students coming in the hallways, coming back and forth. How is this possible?
This is all was planned. Everything was planned. Everything was staged. When your kid gets not at the school, when your kid step foot on that school bus, they are reliable for anything that will happen to that kid.
Mm-hmm.
Until that kid returns home, gets off that bus, and returns home. They are responsible for anything that will happen to your kid. Don't let them tell you no different. They are responsible.
Right, right. And I think that's why you all included the school system in the lawsuit initially, because they're supposed to take care of your kid while they're in their custody, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What a school really messed up at when they started trying to hide the truth. Once they started lying, once they started trying to hide the truth, they really messed up right there. When they should have just told the truth and been done with it.
Right, right. But here's also the thing that's a part of it, because once they force people, like the kid who said, I didn't see it, but my boyfriend, here's what I know from that. Can you think about the burden of carrying that for the rest of your life and nothing happened? And the reason I bring that up, because I've worked with wrongful conviction cases, and a lot of times when the police force these people to tell a lie and somebody gets, you know, 50 years or sometimes get the death penalty because they told a lie for the prosecutors or for the police, those people are messed up for life, Kenneth. I mean, they know the truth, and they know that their testimony led to somebody being put in the prison for many, many years. It's hard to live with that. You got to be a damn sociopath to live with that. So I'm just wondering about that child who said, my boyfriend told me this, what she looks like right about now, 10 years later. You know, it's sad, because this system affects people in ways that we don't even know about. We don't know the harm. We know the harm to Kendrick, definitely. But what's the psychological impact that it's had on other people associated with the cover-up?
I don't know how true this is, but I know she did leave for a while. I heard that they was pressuring her and threatened her so bad, she left town for a long time. But I heard she was back now. Mm-hmm. But for, I know for a long time, she left. She just said she left on us. And not only that, from my understanding from other people, that a lot of those teachers at that time, a lot of the teachers left because of the cover-up and what was going on.
Wow.
But I still say this. Just by them leaving because of the cover-up, those teachers are still the problem, because they know something and they didn't tell it.
Right, right.
So they just as guilty as the ones who done it.
Yeah, they're part of the conspiracy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, I'm thinking about what happens in a place like Valdosta. I don't know if people, this is a small town. I never had heard of it until Jesse Jackson was running for president, and I was sent there to do a story. And I'm like, well, I've never heard of Valdosta, but it was a very small town. People knew, everybody knew each other, you know, kind of thing. So when you say the teachers knew, because again, if you're a teacher at a school, the kids talk, and they tell you stuff, you know. And so, if you were to buck the system, particularly as a white teacher, and black teacher too for that matter, because you are going to suffer consequences. So then you have to say, no matter what happens, I'm going to do the right thing. That's what your values have to tell you that. And if not, then you gotta be responsible for carrying that injustice for as long as you live. I mean, that's just the bottom line. I'm thinking and I'm hoping, Kenneth, that somebody, since you all are keeping the pressure on, somebody is going to buckle and come to grips with their own you know, morality and say, I can't do this any longer. I'm going to go tell the truth. Cause that's what you need right now. You need somebody who says, I know what happened and I can prove what happened. Because, you know, that's it.
But it can't be to the authorities that they're in Vanessa. The information cannot be disclosed to them because they are the ones going
to
try
to twist
it
and turn
it. Try to push everything down.
Yeah.
So it can't, the information cannot go to them. It got to go somewhere else other than them.
And obviously it can't go to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation.
No.
So have you all ever thought about bringing the Department of Justice in? I know that's another arm, but maybe they aren't as close to the issues as maybe the GBI is.
So now, since everything is changing, look like they should come back in, and they should come back in and push the take the jurisdiction away from Valdosta. Because why I say that, the DOJ came in. And the DOJ told me and my wife up there in Macon, Georgia, that they could not find a civil rights violation. So since they couldn't find a civil rights violation, that it had to go back to Valdosta. They said, yeah, we know something happened to Kendrick. We know that he didn't die the way they say it happened. But since the crime happened in Valdosta, it got to go back to Valdosta because we couldn't find a civil rights violation.
Wow.
So now it looks like it should be a way for them to take the jurisdiction away from Valdosta since they are so
corrupt.
Mm-hmm. Since they are so corrupt.
Right. Wow. Well, this is to be continued. Kenneth Johnson, thanks for coming on the show. We wish the best for your family. I'm gonna be checking in with y'all to see, you know, if there's some breaks in the case, cause we got to have a break in this case. We got to.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
All right.
So this weekend is the community rally for Cori Bush, y'all. That's going to be Saturday. The Pomoja session for the 10th anniversary of the Ferguson Uprising to see what lessons we learned. That's on Sunday. Both of those are up on my website, JamalaRogers.com. This is your host. I will see you on the battlefield.
Thank you.
We don't need to stop.